deepest darkness of Dromund-Kos, to the smelly sewers of Nar Shaddaa, to the brightest light that shine on Tython. This is Flashpoint.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 44 of Flashpoint. It's great to be back and apologies for the extra week delay. Thanks to me not being able to work out the fact that we went to daylight saving meant that we had a scheduling conflict or clash. So we're back a week later and I have with me three people again tonight. And first... and I'll work because he's a semi-regular guest now. Luke, how are you, Luke?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Good to be back. And so Luke was on, was it two episodes ago? Three episodes ago. And Luke's our WoW guru and writes on the site and does a brilliant job. And given that so much is going on with WoW at the moment, it's great to have him back. Simon, how are you, sir?
My life is in boxes. Apart from the stuff that's not in boxes, because I don't have enough boxes. Other than that, I'm fine, thanks, mate.
Yes, in the middle of a move, I do honestly sympathise. It's one of the worst jobs. Unless one of the other worst job is having impacted wisdom tooth fixed, and so I'd like to introduce the dentist's best friend, Ed. How are you?
In a word, that sums it up. Pain is not fun. Pain for a month and a half is not fun. If you ever have to get medical care in Canada, don't. Just don't. It takes forever.
It's better than medical care in America, though, which is probably a semi-decent segue to the fact, we'll say it up front, is that, Ed, you're about to have a bit of a journey over the next couple of months, so you may be leaving us for a couple of months.
Yeah, can't get work here in Canada, so I have to go back to the States. I have no idea where I'm going, what I'm going to be doing, but I have family, so I'll be all right. I may not be online, but I'll be all right.
So, yeah, so that means that Ed won't be with us for the next however many episodes. Doesn't mean he's leaving, which is a good thing. So, yeah, we're gonna miss you, mate, over the next, six, eight, whatever it is, weeks. But we look forward to having you back in a number of episodes, hopefully in time, worst case scenario, for episode 50. Now, that would be good. All right, let's jump straight into Star Wars The Old Republic with Republic News.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Republic News.
3 weeks have passed and... not actually that much has happened in Star Wars The Old Republic, although we've still got a little bit to cover. First one being that patch 1.5 has hit the public test server. I'll probably throw to you, Ed, first on this one. Have you had a decent look at 1.5, what they're touting, I doubt you've had time to have an actual play on the public test server, but what are your thoughts?
Well, the one guild that I'm affiliate mostly with is a hardcore raiding guild. So they have a bunch of people who actually go on the public test server and do a bunch of stuff to try to figure out various game mechanics. Having the nightmare mode explosive conflict is good. Having a new boss, a new instance on Belsavis and a new world boss on Belsavis are good. I'm not entirely sure about having the world boss, the thing that they have him set up now, that they, when you kill him, he respawns fairly quickly, and then he drops better loot when whoever kills him again. I am not entirely sure about that. It seems like they're encouraging farming the guy, but other than that, there are a number of bug fixes and things that people have been crying for. There are apparently a number of bug implements, things that have either broken or just happened. I mean, that's what the public test server is for, right? I mean, it's there to find these bugs so that hopefully they can fix them before things go to live. It'll be interesting. The anger management on the Ebon Hawk is very much into rating, so they're very much into figuring out mechanics and things before they have to bring all the newbies like myself along for the ride. And so I'm sure there's a group of them on the public test server, even as we speak, blowing the snot out of whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah, that's what they do. And on the world boss, so you're saying that it's dropping better loot on subsequent kills, is that obviously it can't be an endless ramp up, but does it keep ramping up second, third, fourth, fifth times?
I don't know. All I know is what I read on the patch notes. I haven't actually been on the public test server because the one character that I had that was transferred over was a level 48 with blue gear, and I'm just like, I don't think I'm going through all this just to gear up my character on a public test server.
And that's something that they need to work on badly. I mean, I hate making the WoW comparisons, but having done my first stint on the PTR of WoW for Mr. Pandaria, I mean, the fact that you've got a bunch of template, you know, top-level people to work with sort of helps. But... Yeah,
then they need their top level gear too. They're working on it. A couple of the guys from our guild transferred over with their 50s, so fully geared 50s in campaign gear, best gear in the game currently. Well, Dreadguard gear is better in some ways and not so good in other ways. So they still say that campaign gear is the best, especially if you've modded it, which all of us have.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's no word yet on when 1.5 is going to hit. I'm assuming, given the size of the patch, in that it's a relatively small patch compared to some of the previous ones, as far as the big full number or point number patches, I can't see it being that much further off, but that was...
Oh, I do have to say one thing. Statement, HK51 arrives.
Yes, I was surprised. Yeah, you didn't mention that before. So, I mean, that's probably the key, well, not the key, but one of the probably two biggies of patch 1.5 is the HK51. I know, I read during the week that... a couple of the guilds have, you know, got their HK51s and stuff like that, worked through the whole quest, enjoyed it, thought it was good. I think they're more dedicated than I am, but I can see the value or the appeal. So that's 1.5. Talking about downtimes, last week was one of the most bizarre Star Wars The Old Republic downtimes I've seen, in that they said they're going to do an 8-hour downtime, which is... on average, longer than usual, and then ended up being around a 12-hour downtime with basically zero communication on why between the 8 and the 12 hours. So I know I posted the maintenance downtime on the site. You know, went to bed a bit after midnight, I think, that night. Got up the next morning, and the post had, you know, 40 comments on it from people biding their time, still waiting for it to come up to 4 hours after the 8 hours. I've looked at the dev track, I haven't seen any explanation for it since. Any of you guys?
No, not a thing.
No.
They may not be able to. If it's something, you know, specific to EA, or if it's something, you know, very important, or if it may have legal implications, they may not be able to talk about it. I mean, I don't want to sound like an apologist, but... they are not Ubisoft. If they can talk about things, they will. Ubisoft, you know, why should we talk to you? We are better than you.
And I hope
BioWare is not like that generally.
I didn't know they were Dutch.
All I was going to say is I hope all our listeners out there savored that last Ubisoft rant for a couple of months. It'll be missed. You need to mention Tabula Rasa at some stage during the evening as well.
Don't tempt me.
Don't tempt him.
No, I won't. So that was, yeah, the downtimes. But I mean, I understand they may not be able to say, but at the very least maybe posting something. Yeah, we apologise for it being, and maybe they haven't, I've just not seen it. You know, it was 4 hours, it was unexpectedly long maintenance. Sorry about that, but it seems a bit bizarre otherwise. Oceanic server mergers. So there's been a little bit of action on the official forums and elsewhere from Oceanic players, and it's a bit of a funny one, this one, in that we quite rightly got very pissed off when they announced Dalzi Old Republic launching and the Australian, New Zealand sort of Oceanic territory wasn't part of the launch area from an official marketing, able to buy a box copy viewpoint. And there was a lot of uncertainty initially about whether we'd be able to, you know, buy it online and still access, which we obviously could. Then we launched, and then there was the lobby on for Oceanic servers. And then when the local launch did occur in March, we got them, the three servers, the PvE, PvP, and role-playing servers. They're live, and since there's been a bit of a drop-off in subscribers and that, I think the other two servers besides Dalbora have become pretty much very, very dead, and even Dalbora is a bit low at times. So now there's a bit of a lobbying on for how can we merge these three servers into a lesser number, which is obviously two or one, and my guess would be one. And we're just waiting on BioWare. So BioWare apparently looking into it. They're not commenting at this stage. Starting with you, Simon, what's your thought on server? I mean, we're in a bit of a quandary in that we've lobbied, we've got Oceanic servers, and now we're asking for some of them to be taken away. How do you think it's going to pan out?
Well, I mean, it's a smaller market, but basically the same concerns we have are the same concerns that the US and Europe had, which is with the way the game's dropped away. There's just too few people. Now, are they going to end up dropping the server quantity down? I think they'll probably wait until after free-to-play kicks in and then reevaluate at that time. If they do get a big uptick in subscriber numbers from free-to-play, then it may preserve it, or maybe they'll just bring it down to two, because I think generally it's the PvP servers that tend to suffer first, because, of course, the PvP and the hardcore rating's not quite where that sort of player wants it to be in SWTOR. So, yeah, I think they're probably just going to wait and see, because three servers isn't that much, and if they're going to drop it down to two or one, they may as well just shift it to North America.
Yeah, and that's the real concern as far as, yeah, like why would you bother maintaining the infrastructure in, was it Melbourne or Sydney? The service?
I think it's in Sydney.
Sydney, yeah. Mm. So why would you bother maintaining that expense if you're down to one or two? So you're right, I think free-to-play is where they'll wait, and that'll be probably for next episode. We'll have a bit of a more detailed discussion on whether free-to-play is going to bring in good numbers, which hopefully it will.
Although you can see how many cartel coins you're going to get now, which is exciting, maybe.
Do you want to talk more about that? That's a good point.
I haven't really been following that. So cartel points.
Well, there's nothing to follow. You just log into the website and it tells you how many cartel coins you're going to get.
Yeah,
that's really it. We don't know. We still don't know what they're going to buy.
No,
they've allocated us a quantity of coins, but they still haven't given us any idea what, if anything, they're going to buy.
No, good point.
I want to buy a Death Star.
A Death Star mount. See, I would totally buy a Death Star mount.
No, I just want the Death Star. As long as it's got the super laser on it, I want the Death Star. You know, just point, click, bang, something, you know, a planet explodes. That's what I want.
Maybe Ilum could explode. I'd like to see Ilum explode.
That would be so tempting, actually. No, well, Ilum or
Belsavis.
Yeah, Belsavis. Or Terrace. Oh, incinerate Terrace in its entirety. Yes.
I think we've got unanimity there on Terrace from all four of us. So there you go. Because Luke, you've played some Star Wars The Old Republic, haven't you?
I'm actually downloading the latest patches now, so I should be playing again soon.
Excellent. Actually, let's do a quick roll call as far as where we're up to. I know, Simon, with your box wrangling, you haven't had a lot of chance, but where are your characters up to?
I've got the Sith Warrior's 43, almost 44, so he's within reach of 50 now, or at least the end of his storyline.
Yeah. Nice. Luke?
I have a 50 Sage, Juggernaut, and Mercenary.
Nice.
And various other alts.
Well, Ed, I just know you've got multiple 50s and you're living in.
I am an altaholic. What can I say?
And my consul has been totally ignored the last fortnight, but as promised, the last 3 weeks. But I did say I would play more last episode, and I have. So I've made some nice progress on my Sith Warrior as well, although he's only up to, I think it's nearly 16. So early days. But. There you go. That's State of the Union with our tunes.
I'll say this. The Sith Warrior story so far has been better than any of the other ones I've played so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. Are you going dark side or light side?
Well, I seem to just sort of end up going dark side without really meaning to. So.
Yeah, I've gone dark side.
Yeah, that's sort of the point of being a Sith, right?
Yeah, it is, but then the temptation is always do the opposite just to see what that story is like. But having been a super angelic consular, I couldn't stomach another light side storyline. So,
I agree with that.
I have to admit, there are moments in the Sith Warrior storyline that just absolutely... You just remember them. Like the scene where the two groups of thugs come in where you're picking up the delivery for Barriss. Spoiler alert. You're picking up a delivery for your master. One group of thugs comes in, accosts you. Another group of thugs comes in, accosts the first group of thugs and you. And you have a choice. You can try to negotiate with them. You can fight them all. Or you can intimidate them. The last time I chose intimidate just to see what would happen. And of course, my warrior immediately went, "Rah! I'm gonna eat you!" And the thugs just sort of went, "Wait a minute, he's a Sith. They kill people. They don't eat them. He's crazy! Run away!" And I'm just sitting there going, "Okay, that was good." And then Vet's reaction was just, "Oh my god! That was a heck of a bluff." Who was bluffing?
I remember that, and it was quite funny.
Yeah, it's lots of fun, like stuff like that in there. That's for sure. Last thing before we do jump into lore update is I just wanted to give a shout out to one of the other contributors to the website, Matthew Pierce, or Scope as he's better known. He started a column called One Shot, One Kill, which is going really well. And he's sort of covering two specific classes, and I'm just going to make an absolute fool of myself now by forgetting which one they were. It's been a long weekend.
This is what edits are for.
No, I'm not going to edit. See, you're hearing this stuff up live, so I'm just madly scrolling down the site. But they're two similar ones, and I know that they're nasty people, super nasty people, and I'm nearly there. Here we go. Oh, yeah, Imperial Agent Sniper Build was the first one that Scope did. So if you're a sniper, then... go for it.
And Imperial agents aren't nasty people. They're just doing their job.
True. They're being officious. They're more officious than nasty.
No, you don't even have to be officious to be an agent. You can be fully, very polite, very urbane, very, calm, cool, and collected. Then you stab somebody in the back.
Yeah.
My agent's charming, quite frankly, so I don't know what you're
so
talking about.
So is mine.
About.
I mean, my agent is actually very nice most of the time. Until she shoots you.
See, and that's further proof that both of you, have chosen characters opposite your own personalities. I think we all do that. So, particularly on the charming front. So.
Yeah, bite me.
Yeah, that's right. Hit me with a box. So that's Star Wars The Old Republic, except for the lore update. And Ed, I know you've got a short one this week, so go for it.
Right. I've had a bunch of people I've seen a bunch of people and had several people ask me in game, how can everybody understand each other in the game? I mean, we've got all these different aliens. We've got Twi'leks. We've got Wookiees. We've got Hutts. We've got everything under the sun, and they can all understand each other. How? I mean, do they have the universal translator? I actually had somebody ask that, and my response was, first of all, facepalm. Second of all, that's Star Trek, dude. No. The actual answer is called a plot device. The plot device is that it's far easier for a writer to write out that there is a universal galactic language, in this case, galactic basic, than to write out multiple different languages for each and every separate race. But at the same time, if you have one language that's, you know, generic or universal, you're going to have another language that's just for your race or your culture or whatever. One of my favorites, and yes, I had to use this, Simon, is the Hutts. They understand basic just fine. They understand it just marvelously. When Luke went to challenge Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi, Jabba understood exactly what Luke was saying. He didn't need the translator droid. But the reason that C-3PO was there was because Jabba felt it was demeaning for him to speak anything other than Huttese. And there are other races in the galaxy that feel the same way. The Trandoshans can actually speak Galactic Basic. But Kwisen, the Trandoshan that the Consular has, speaks Dosh. Because that's what he chose to do. That's what he chooses to do. And the people that he speaks to, they can understand him. You know, if he had to speak to somebody who didn't understand Dosh, he could probably use basic, but he probably wouldn't be very good at it because he doesn't practice it. It's the same kind of thing as people who practice other languages in real life. I have a certain amount of fluency in Spanish and a very limited fluency in Japanese. If I have to ask where the bathroom is, I could do it in either language. If I have to carry on a discussion in subatomic physics, I'll need a translator, both of them. So it's basically, you know, the language is what the language is. You have a racial language. You have the main language for the Star Wars universe, which is Galactic Basic, which in our world translates to whatever language the programmer has programmed into the game or whatever. If it's an English game, it's English. If it's a German game, it's German. If it's a Russian version of whatever, it's Russian. I've seen it in Japanese and Swahili. But, you know, it's basically there is no universal translator. Even C-3PO, the ultimate translation device, can't translate every single language. You know what? You remember what happened in Return of the Jedi when he tried to say hello, right? The Ewoks thought he was a god.
I did indeed.
And that is languages in the Star Wars universe. Comments, suggestions, shut the heck up. What?
No, I find that interesting. The cynic in me says it's a wonder George Lucas didn't make the Galactic Basic sound like Pig Latin or something, because that sort of stylish guy is. But
that's the Gamorrean language.
Yeah, true. It does sound a bit like that.
And Simon, just for you, Boska.
You expect me to respond to that? And anyway, Huttese is a bastardization of English anyway.
Of course it is. They all are. So what?
Winky to sleep. I mean,
Actually, that makes Pig Latin look stylish.
Mm.
Well, you have to remember when the movie was made, too. So, you know, things have come along that a little bit since, you know, Return of the Jedi came out and we first met the Hutts.
True. And actually, on that, there's one thing I need to admit to, and you can all laugh here and anyone listening. I never saw about, I think it was about 8 or 9 months ago. Oh, no, sorry, it was April Fool's. The April Fool's joke that was published that George Lucas and James Cameron announced the last three movies, or the ones, you know, that occurred after the original series, and all the press release, and how excited James Cameron was to be working on it, and there'd be a few surprises. And I was just rapt. I was doing somersaults, and then posted it on Facebook.
April Fool.
Yeah, I know. And never noticed the April 1st byline, assumed it was a new story, and I was devastated.
I'm profoundly relieved.
Well, yeah, me too. Get him away from movies, please. Yeah,
George Lucas should not be making movies.
But I thought, I mean, James Cameron's, you know, not the most innovative film director, but I mean, with his, you know, if it was him rather than George Lucas directing, which is what the thing was alluding to, I could see that might have worked.
Yeah, if he actually got a lobotomy and decided to join in with this mess,
yeah,
he might be able to pull it off. But yeah.
If Cameron was doing the script, possibly. If Lucas was involved in the plot.
Oh.
No, shoot me now, please.
But see, I'd still rather have the three see the light of day for the you know, 1 in 10 chance that they're actually okay, rather than never know. But anyway, this was an April Fool's joke. No,
we would end up with the computer-generated Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Trust me. If those two got involved, it would be like Jeff Daniels in Tron Legacy.
Rather than Jeff Daniels in The Newsroom.
Not Jeff Daniels. What's his name?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Bruce, you know the one I mean.
I never
Is it Bruce Boxleitner?
No.
Jeff Bridges.
That's the one. Yes.
Yeah.
What's sad, Simon, is I never even picked up on that. I was just thinking of Jeff because I've been watching The Newsroom the last couple of months and love it. And Jeff Daniels is leading that. But yes, he obviously wasn't in Star Wars.
No.
That we know of.
That we know of. Mm. Oh, I can hear a jet going overhead.
That's a police helicopter, I suspect. They're looking for
No wonder you're packing things into boxes. You didn't make your getaway quick enough.
No.
So there we go. Thank you, Ed, for that last lore update for a little while anyway. Now, I believe you may need to dash.
Yeah, I got to go wake up my stepfather.
So we
make
love
sure
you.
He gets to church today.
I'll definitely be talking to you before you zip off down the road. But from the listeners, we'll miss you and we'll see you in a little while.
Well, just for posterity's sake,
yeah,
in case that I can't come back soon, anytime soon. I do love MMOs. Always have loved MMOs. Ever since I first played Tabula Rasa, I've loved MMOs. And I really enjoyed doing this podcast with you guys.
Oh, I see, you know, you're pivotal to this, mate, because you've been there you have been there since day one.
You and I started this crazy crud.
So, no, and I said, I see it very much as a hiatus while you get some things sorted. So, yeah, we look forward to having you back in a couple of months.
Right.
Yeah, come back and we can do a Firefall podcast. Woo, Firefall.
Yes. And see, there is a bright side to every dark cloud, and that's you won't have to listen to that laugh for 8 weeks or more.
Yeah, don't worry about it. By then, hopefully, my evil laugh will have matured a little bit.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, mate. You take
y'all
it
later.
Easy and we'll talk soon.
Okay, later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so let's move briefly on to Guild Wars 2. Guild Wars 2, I feel really bad. It's going to be a bit of a short one this week because it's probably a positive reason why I feel like there's never much to talk about with Guild Wars 2 unless we're going to get deep into guild goings-on or stuff like that. And that's because the way ArenaNet approach their server maintenance and updating, and we posted something during the week, they've done a fascinating they did a fascinating Ask Me Anything session on Reddit where the developers gave real details on how they essentially avoid server maintenances or minimize them to very infrequent events. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that. But so it always feels like every 2 or 3 weeks I go, well, what's happening in Guild Wars 2? I've played it a bit, which I have. And what else is to report on? Well, you know, this time we'll talk Halloween in a sec. But beyond that, there's never any big issues. So from a negativity viewpoint, that's good. But it sometimes feels like there's not a lot of great news. So, if you've got stuff you'd like us to cover with Guild Wars 2, drop us a line because we'd love to talk about it. I know I'm playing it. Simon, I know you haven't had a chance, but you still got it. And Luke, you're not a Guild Wars 2 player. You are.
I haven't played lately, though.
No.
Fortunately.
The Halloween event has started.
Starts the 22nd.
Yeah, 22nd. I was going to say. I'm getting mixed up with the Secret World. So it starts on the 22nd, and I'm about to publish a bit of a rant on the thing. I have a real issue with Halloween in MMOs. So, WoW does it with Hallow's End. At least they have the taste not to call it Halloween, although there's a real Halloween sort of theme about it with pumpkins and stuff like that. And it's well underway at the moment. Secret World, and we'll be into that later. If ever there was an MMO that should have Halloween, it's that one, so that makes sense. But with Guild Wars 2, I just think it totally breaks the immersion. That said, I haven't, it hasn't started, but I haven't read deeply into it either. Simon, what's your view on Guild Wars 2 and Halloween? Is it just a little bit too much pandering to particularly a North American market that is outside the lore, or does it fit?
You said panda.
Oh, I did too.
Sorry. It really depends on how they do it. I haven't seen much of the artwork. If it's all jack-o'-lanterns and candy corn, then I'll be crying foul. But the fact that they have actually given it a bit of a spin that's consistent with the history, with the shadow of the Mad King and all being about Mad King Thorn running around sort of spreading insanity but hasn't been seen for 250 years or something, so he's now folklore, but presumably he's about to become reality again. So I think potentially it's got legs. So if it's a festival of spookiness and frights and chills, but it's consistent with the world that we know within Guild Wars 2, don't have a problem with it. It just depends, and I think that's probably the way they go.
Yeah, it's really, you're right. It comes down to how well integrated it is in the game. It's really hard to see past the particularly Australian cynicism on Halloween anyway, that why they feel the need to put very current world seasonal events in games like this that are so far removed from where we are. But
True, it's the wrong time of year for us, but you can't beat it up too much because without Halloween, we wouldn't have Treehouse of Horror or Terror. I always forget in The Simpsons.
Oh, yes, true. I have seen that episode. I don't know. Terror or Horror? Yeah, I think it's Terror.
I think so. Alliteration's more fun. I'm just going to have to mute because I think the medevac's coming overhead.
It's the police, but nice cover up. That's a Halloween event, and we'll talk more about that next episode because we will have had a chance to experience it in depth. So I look forward to talking more about that. And I mentioned the Reddit Q&A that they did. Aside from how they keep server downtime to a minimum, which is essentially a fascinating process of running the patches alongside the old patch so that as people log in, they go into the new one. And gradually migrate off the old one. That was my understanding of it anyway, which is a pretty cool process.
That is a cool process.
Yeah, they also cover what they see as the biggest defects in the game and what's restricting them from actually fixing them. So I thought that was very transparent. And for the real programming geek, of which I'm certainly not one, they actually go into, because they were developers, not graphic artists or gaming design people, They actually go into great detail about programming methodologies and how they actually run their programming team on Guild Wars 2. So if you're into that sort of stuff, that link is gold. So I'll post a link in the show notes. So, but yeah, overall, Guild Wars 2 going gangbusters from what I can gather. Still some irritating glitches like any MMO, but overall doing well.
Yeah, all in all, it's been pretty, well, as much as any of these things can be flawless, it seems to have been. And not a lot of whining from the community either, which is also refreshing, considering recent experiences.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why it's a bizarre thing as a podcaster to go, well, it's really hard each week to know what to talk about unless we get into strategies and, you know, WVWW stuff for, yeah, anyway, it's going well.
Oh, well, next podcast, at least, we can give a little potted review of what we thought of the Halloween festival.
Hear, hear. So let's jump straight into the secret world. Two episodes ago, episode 42, although we recorded episode 42 and 43 the same night, we did an interview with Joel Bylos, the game director for The Secret World, an expatriate Aussie. We got a huge response to that, and thanks to Joel again for jumping on the show. It's by far and away the most listened to podcast we've done. Very much helped by the fact that Joel was very forthcoming and open and transparent, which has been my vibe with that game anyway. So, yeah, and there was a lot of interest in some things he had to say, right down to actually the biggest focus was people impressed that Funcom were rehiring some employees they'd had to let go when they did some restructuring. That was probably the point that got linked back to the most from other sites. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think you'd agree, Simon, you enjoyed that one.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't have someone sitting over our shoulder like we did when we had a chat to Stephen Reed. So we got, I think we basically got pretty full and frank and complete answers to the questions we asked.
That's right. And I think that the difference too, I mean, Stephen Reed helped out a little bit where he could, but the difference is that this is more like talking to Daniel Erickson's probably not the best analogy, but sort of similar level seniority, which was, yeah, very good. So the Halloween event in the Secret World, I've been away for the weekend, so I haven't actually, I'm dying to jump in and try, but it's now live, and there's some very detailed, there's a nice video of the event. Again, throwing to you, Simon, at this stage, I mean, I know you've checked out the Halloween stuff a little bit, particularly the videos and stuff. Do you like what you see? Because I know I do.
Yeah, I do. It's great that it brings in characters that you met fairly early on, and just it feels like it's added a lot more depth to what was already a fairly deep and atmospheric environment. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting into it and digging a bit more, and especially buying the pirate costume, I have to admit.
Can't beat a pirate costume. Yeah, I said I'm just hanging to get in this coming week and have a go at it. And, yeah, so for those unaware, the Halloween expansion or episode 4 is very much revolves around Kingsmouth again, which means if you're a lame-ass noobish player like me who's barely out of Kingsmouth, it'll all be even more familiar. But for those who haven't been there for a while, I think it'll be a pleasant homecoming. It's all about Irish cat gods and Irish cat gods. Yes.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
He's a freaky looking devil.
Yeah. And it just, look, I know I sound like an unadulterated fanboy with this game, but if you've played the game, you love the graphics, you love the feel of it. This just seems to totally fit within that nice and enhance it a bit as well. So yeah, pretty excited about that. Reticle Combat was the other one. So there was a very interesting, I think it was it over 45 minutes or an hour, the video?
Yeah,
long video.
Really long.
I won't say I've watched it all, but I watched a good more than 30 minutes of it. So with I can't remember. I think they said with episode 5, the reticle combat's coming out. Anyway, it's coming out soon.
Yeah, it hasn't even hit the art department yet.
No, sorry, I might be exaggerating that. So, but yeah, maybe episode 5 or 6. For those like me that were wondering what reticle combat, I initially, when I heard the word, thought it meant like reticule, R-E-T-I-C-U-L-E, combat, as far as the nice little graphics you see for AOE effects in games like WoW. But no, it's reticle as in R-E-T-I-C-L-E, combat, which is just basically a gun sight. But it's also a different form of gameplay, more like a, what, Call FPS. Of Duty? Yeah, first-person shooter, where you aim your gun sight, and it's a much more fluid in a lot of ways. How would you describe it, Simon?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, because if that's the sort of gameplay you like, if you like the existing style of combat and the third-person view, then you probably won't want to change, but it does add more precision without a doubt. You can also, the fact that you can just zoom right in so you're looking through your character's eyes, or just have it so you're over their shoulder. Really, I think it's going to add something which I think a lot of players have probably been feeling is missing in this game. Although, having said that, there's also a question of how much are they adulterating the original vision of the game? Because this is something that does concern me, because some people have think that doing the investigations is too much work. The fact you actually have to go and look for stuff, not necessarily in the game, but, you know, just like knowledge online. Are they going to begin watering things down because they didn't get the size of a player base that they were anticipating? Are they going to try and water it down to get more of a mass market appeal?
Yeah,
that's the only thing that I'm just, I like the idea of the reticle, but I'm not sure whether it bodes well.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point. The only thing is, I think in that video they were saying that the reticle combat was always part and parcel of their original vision, but had to get dropped so they could ship the game. So apparently that was always intended as part of it. But yeah, see your point.
That's okay then.
Yeah, your head might have been in a box during that part of the video.
It's entirely possible. But then, just because it was something that they were originally going to do but got dropped, I mean, you look at a game like Star Wars The Old Republic, there's a lot of stuff in there that's originally going to appear and got dropped.
Yeah.
So,
and then there's some stuff in there that should have been dropped.
Yes, but let's not talk about that.
Belsarvis. Or Taris, sorry. So, yeah, the reticle stuff, and you can, I know in the video they have to do a bit of a manual switch between the two modes, but apparently once it's released, it'll be an easy toggle on and off, which is good. And, you know, the gameplay they showed, I liked it. I could see I would use it, particularly if you were running around, you know, doing one of the not that common, you know, kill 15 of this or that quest. I can see that it would really appeal. So, looking good, and they're certainly still churning out the content. I don't know what they're certainly, you know, regular, once a month there's something new and interesting come out, so well done to them.
Yeah.
That'll do for the secret world. I'll probably, one last thing, if you're in a secret world cabal, I would love, particularly an oceanic one, would love to hear from you. Would love to get a bit more profiling out there of, I know they're not guilds, but cabals. So please drop us a line if you're in that space, and same for Guild Wars 2 as well, or any, as always happy to profile local guilds, cabals, whatever you want to be. And on that, let's jump finally into World of Warcraft. We're now, Luke, same here, 3 weeks into Pandaria?
Three weeks.
And, well, state of play for me is I still haven't hit 90, although I'm 89 and about 30%. Yeah, 30%. So I'm probably, by the end of this week, if I get some play time, I'll have hit 90. But it's, I'd have to say, and I'll get you to jump in detail in a second, Luke, I'd have to say it's been a pretty smooth ride. Normal sort of downtimes. They've done a few server, 15-minute server restarts a number of evenings. The overall reception, from what I can see, has been much more positive than Cataclysm. Although it's always
definitely
hard,
has, yeah.
Yeah, it's always hard to compare expansions, but, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of aggro about the game. Well, but yeah, Luke, jump in with your stuff because you've played a lot more of it than I have.
I agree with that because, I mean, in Cataclysm, we saw the aggravation as soon as the raids came out. As soon as they were cleared, people were starting to complain, and I haven't really seen that yet from Pandaria. But there are also two raids still to be released, so see how that goes.
And overall impression, like, what are your characters up to?
Well, I'm currently leveling a monk as well. That's level 60 now. Been doing a bit of looking for raid on my rogue, and that's been quite a lot of fun, actually. It's still easy. Like, it's still a little bit easy, but it feels like the bosses through the dungeon are getting, through the raid, are getting a little bit harder. It's like they're pushing players to get better in raids so that they can make them harder in future, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just flowing very smoothly. And I probably want, one thing I wanted to address on the podcast is to the WoW haters, and there's no shortage of them, and most of them perhaps legitimately, because, you know, Blizzard have certainly made their share of stuff-ups over the years. If you left after Burning Crusade or left after Wrath of the Lich King or even left after Cataclysm, I won't go as far as to say that this is a new game because it's not, and I mean the engine's so familiar and it's an aging engine, but the gameplay in this expansion is different enough to make it a whole new proposition even for the cynical ex-player. And Luke, I'll get you to jump in a sec with some of your highlights. But just, and if you don't like questing, all right, a lot of this may not appeal, but the questing experience is just so much more fun, even though it's taking quite rightly a while to get to 90. Whether it's dinky little things like there's a quest I just completed where I had to roll down a hill in a barrel and set the barrel alight to crush as many, I've forgotten which race it was, but anyway, crush a whole bunch of creatures. And get, you know, kill 50 of them, and it might have taken me, I don't know, 12 barrel rolls, but it was a bloody hoot.
That quest was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and things like the balloon rides, even the lore, the explanation of the story, the unveiling of particular vistas or scenery that, you know, you may discover it for yourself, or it may be part of a cutscene and merges quite nicely into that vista. It's just extremely well done. So besides, I mean, obviously besides the barrel one, Luke, what's been some highlights for you in the leveling process?
Well, I mean, in regards to the barrel, there's a few mechanics like that. One of the heroics, if you don't use barrels to blow up a boss, you're probably not going to kill him, which is quite a lot of fun. I've enjoyed just the storyline of the Shadow Pan and the bug people. If you have done, or if you the Lore Walkers exalted grind for the objects, the lore objects around, once you hand those in, you get a little in-game, it's not really a cutscene, just a little reenactment from ghosts about the lore, and you learn all about all the different races and why where the Yongle came from and the bug people and things like that. That was
okay. Excellent.
I really enjoyed that. The scenarios, I've done a few more of those, and they're, I don't particularly like them myself, but they're good for a player who can jump on for half an hour to play. They'll be able to get a scenario done with ease, and they might get some items out of it if they're lucky in their loot bag.
And just, I mean, just on the scenario, you remind me of an issue, and I'm purely referencing a WoW podcast here, and probably one I'd happily recommend. It's a fairly big podcast now, though, and that's called Convert to Raid. And thanks to one of our listeners, Blackie, and my guild master for recommending it. And what they said, and I 100% agree with, is it's the variety of options you have now when you log on that make it a very appealing game. So whether it's the scenarios, doing your normal heroics or raiding, building the reputation, so they've changed the reputation grinds, the pet battles, which I think is probably still the most successful feature of the expansion as far as, you know, you'd still think it's silly, but the amount of people I know that just love the pet battles, the new PvP options, even the world bosses. So, I mean, I've, you know, stood around the Shah of Anger, I think it was, twice now, where we've actually had raid groups of 40 attempting to take it down and still failing, mind you. But there's a lot of community feel in the game at the moment.
The Shah of Anger is quite a lot of fun now because they have lowered his spawn rate to about 20 minutes.
Oh, really?
And so there's a lot of groups forming, which is creating more competition than when he was a rare spawn to get hold of him first. Yeah, yeah. So it's been quite a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, it's quite amazing seeing sort of a group of, say, 40 Alliance and another group of 40 Horde and fighting over who gets to get the next go, or, you know, who gets... I assume it works is that whoever gets the first cast in draws it and the other lot just have to stand by and watch.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works, yeah.
So...
be quite a lot of fun on a PvP server, that's for certain.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's really breathed some new life into it. I know last episode we talked about the 2.4 or 2.7 million sales. I haven't heard anything since then, but I'd be surprised if it stagnated there. I'd say they've grown that further. And Boxman Simon, I know you're intending on getting back into this. Have I convinced you more urgently too?
Oh, no. I didn't need convincing.
No, I didn't.
Definitely going to be going in.
Yeah.
It's just I just have to schedule it in my busy, busy day.
I was going to say, if anyone out there would like to sponsor, you know, Luke, Ed, Simon and myself to play MMOs full-time, we're more than open to that option.
Certainly am.
Yeah. So, you know, what? Just 100K a year each, boys?
Sounds fair.
That'd cover it, yeah.
Oh, I'd probably do it for 20.
So, are we talking about in-game currency?
No, definitely not.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, wow, it's still kicking ass. I really, yeah, it's certainly, if of an evening, once, you know, finished the work day and done everything else, if I'm sitting down to play an MMO at the moment, it is the honeymoon period with a new expansion, but WoW's tending to win out at the moment out of the four that I play, with Secret World second. But, yeah. I promise you, we're all still trying to play all four where we can.
We're trying to, yes. There's a lot going on at the moment.
So, yeah.
We're going to see a lot of changes in 5.1 as well with the Black Prince quest lines. We're going to see a lot of PvP involved in that, so that should be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. So, I mean, we're only 3 weeks into the expansion, but 5.1's hit the public test realm. But we don't know obviously when it'll be released. But yeah, there's, you know, a not insignificant content update coming out. I mean, WoW have been relatively good with this stuff since before Cataclysm, but they seem to have ramped it up another step with constantly making sure there's new stuff coming out, which stresses me a bit because, I mean, I'm not even raid ready, let alone doing anything else.
I wouldn't worry about that just yet.
No. It's not keeping up with the Joneses.
I think they've done a good job of getting people raid ready, given where they've launched it. They've had we've had Brewfest, and we've got Headless Horseman now, so it's quite easy for the people to get the gear levels that they need at the moment. Whereas if it had been launched early in the year or around Christmas, those things wouldn't be around for easily accessible.
Yeah, true. As someone that's having done the what a long strange trip it's been achievement, I just can't face a lot of those seasonal events anymore.
No, I've got that as well, and it's just I can't do any of the other things other than just do the boss. I can't fly around to all these fires and pumpkin heads anymore.
No,
you know, I need 150 tokens to buy the feline familiar, and I just can't bring myself to do it.
No, I love my Violet Proto Drake, but I just can't do a lot of that stuff anymore. Although, that's it, I am working towards Exalted with Dark Moon Fair, so that's how mad I am. But, so there you go. WoW, go. Now, that's it for the MMOs. The only other thing that I was going to mention briefly was League of Legends. It was an interesting story over at Forbes.com about how League of Legends was potentially the world's most popular game. So as much as we talk about four relatively popular MMOs, and WoW is the dominant one with, you know, I think they've just broken over 10 million again. League of Legends puts it all in perspective in that they've got 70 million registrations, but sure, that's not active users, which, you know, in the scale of things, puts it, as far as monthly active players, 32 million online every month, which is, you know, pretty huge. Whereas, you know, Grand Theft Auto's lifetime sales are 85 million, Call of Duty's trilogy lifetime sales are 65 million. So League of Legends have 32 million logging in every month, which is enormous, and 12 million daily active players. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot. I'm assuming neither of you have played League of Legends, because I know I haven't.
I haven't, no.
I tried it once just to see what was going on.
At risk of hearing screams from around the podcastosphere, isn't it a little bit like it's a 2D, well, you know, like a Diablo sort of.
It's an isometric point and click.
It's huge. So I feel like I should play it just because lots of other people are.
Just having a look at that image from the story that you're talking about, and looking at the stats of who plays it, what age they are, and things like that, it looks like I should be playing it as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Actually, over 90% of players are male, which is interesting because, you know, WoW, it's been a while since I've looked at the stats, but from memory it's about 60-40 or 70-30 male-female. So, yeah, it's a much more male-dominated game. And, yeah, 85% are aged between 16 and 30, so that covers all three of us. And 60% are enrolled in or have completed some college, for whatever that means.
Probably mostly male because it's a very competitive environment. It's an e-sport, or if it isn't an e-sport, it should be an e-sport.
And everyone knows girls shouldn't play sport.
And
that's a quite rightful dead silence. Sorry, just, you know, with all the political goings on around misogyny, I had to make a misogynist comment. Although not, I don't know whether that qualifies as misogynist.
It depends if it's the traditional definition or the new
definition. True. There is that. So, yeah, League of Legends, if you want to get into an enormous community, it looks like that's the one to be. And it just shows you the mainstream media. And I'll probably include podcasts like ours too. I mean, I always tend to think of WoW as the dominant MMO. Well, if you think of League of Legends as an MMO, which it pretty much is, then, you know, it makes WoW look like pretty small change. But good small change.
Well, subscription-based small change, which ain't that small.
That's true.
It's true.
And last thing is, again, please feel to scream at me in comments, but my understanding is Marvel Heroes have started emailing out small amounts of beta invites. Unfortunately, I'm certainly not one of them, although I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember. I thought I'd registered for beta, but I honestly can't remember. But if you're lucky enough to get one, then have fun testing out the game. They're still aiming for release first half of next year, Simon?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're enrolled in the beta, if you've received the survey email and done the little survey.
There you go. Yeah, see, I don't recall having done the survey, so maybe I'm not. And Stephen Reed's sitting over there still, I assume, doing...
Yes, doing what he does best, which is wrangling people. There are limited quantities of closed beta invites out there. I believe a number were given, or not a large number, were given away to people who attended the New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And I think a few discreet ones have been sent out to friends of the game, friends of Gazillion, you know, people who have had a lot to do with it. But as far as I'm aware, general wide-ranging invitations haven't gone out yet. I believe they're waiting for sort of a critical mass of applications, and then they'll start going through and pushing out more invitations. That's my understanding of it. I haven't seen anything so far to conflict with that, but I could be wrong. Wouldn't be the first time.
And because they haven't announced whether it's a subscription or free to play yet, have they?
It's a free to play.
Oh, it is free to play. Sorry, there you go. I would have thought that it would have to give League of Legends a run for its money.
Oh, I think there is a distinct possibility it will do that.
But then I was the one that thought Star Wars was going to kick everyone's ass too. But
well, it should have.
It should have.
The Lucas the Hutt. Oh, seems to be the kiss of death. If you've seen that, what's that movie about World War II flying aces that he did? Great special effects.
That was it.
Where's the acting? Where's the plot?
Yeah.
Where's my money back? Seems to have sort of lost the plot.
Whereas I would have thought with Marvel Heroes, there's got to be at least a few million people out there that want to be the Hulk alone. Let alone anything else.
Yeah, but yeah, and that's the thing. You're tied down to being one of a set roster of characters. That said, undoubtedly there is going to be a cash shop with probably costume options. So considering how many alternate universes and so forth and incarnations they've had, you'll end up, well, I mean, Hulk, pick a colour. Basically.
True. I'm still continuing my lobbying campaign for the Dazzler to be in the game at launch. I'm not getting a lot of people jumping on board though. I don't know why.
I think the Dazzler is going to make an appearance in Deadpool.
Actually that would be a better fit. That would be a better fit. So anything else, boys, before we go? And I shouldn't say boys. See, that's making out I am a misogynist and this is a male podcast. Which it sort of is, but not out of choice. I'm happy to dump either of you for a gender equal co-host.
Feel free.
Yeah.
No, we'll pick. Have
my Sunday nights back. Thank you. Cheers.
That's right. And no, we just dump Ed. So, you know, he's gone now. He's dead. Ed who?
Oh, he's going to appreciate that.
I hope you're listening, mate, because I know he does. He always listens back. So anything else before we wrap up?
That's it, I think.
I can't think of anything offhand.
Well, I hope your box wrangling goes well.
Oh, it's a freaking nightmare. if you guys haven't gone to the Firefall site and started reading the manga or the various issues of the manga on the site, go and have a look.
What's the manga?
It's like a comic, online comic book. There's several issues have been released, and the pages of each are released incrementally. So,
so is it called the manga, or are you talking? It's
well, that's what they refer to it as. Yes.
Okay.
But
so, like a male version of Julia Gillard.
It's written by Orson Scott Card, so shut the hell up.
Yeah, okay, now I'm being disrespectful. No, as soon as you mention it, okay, yeah, I apologize and withdraw that comment.
No, you can't do that.
No, see, there's an awkward silence now. I feel like I've just created a rift.
Oh, speaking of rift.
I know.
Their new player housing, that looks pretty darned interesting, actually.
I tell you what, if one of us could, you know, find another 4 hours in our week to play Rift, I'd love to talk about Rift. It's just a time issue. So, what's the player housing look like?
Basically, you can buy or get your own personal dimension, and I'm a little sketchy on the details, but if you go to the site or YouTube it, do a Google search for the video. You'll be able to see the press release. But basically, what they're doing is they've produced a tool that really allows you to customize an environment. So if there's a dimension that you've been to before or an area, a number of them are being made available as player housing or personal dimensions, and you can build things in them. There's sort of a bit Minecrafty, not as blocky, but you can take assets and you can combine them in unique ways to build things. You can scale them, you can shift them anywhere. You can have things flying in midair if you want. And I believe it's a telescope or something. If you get that, you can actually change the skybox.
That's cool.
So you can change the time of day, the weather, and so on. So kind of awesome, I thought. It looks really promising. And it's not only is it a really good way of letting people connect with something that they may already like in the game, but it's also a really clever use of existing assets.
Yeah. I mean, Rift's an example of where I hope to see Star Wars The Old Republic and The Secret World, in that it's got a solid following and still doing innovative things.
Yeah, unfortunately, much as I still want the game to do well, do you ever watch Futurama?
Only a couple, I'm ashamed to admit.
Well, anyone who watches Futurama will be aware of the box company executives who cancelled Planet Express's contract and what happened to them. But I can't help feeling that some of the people running BioWare at the moment are a bit like the box company executives, and may they also end up as executive powder.
But yeah, I feel bad about, like, I'm acutely aware, and we don't claim to cover all MMOs by any stretch of imagination, but I'm aware that Rift is a big omission of what we cover, but you can only do so much.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, we don't have time to play the ones we're covering.
That's right. Half
time. Sorry, everyone. Which we do try.
We do
try. Real life gets in the way.
Exactly. So anything last, I know you said no, Luke, you're all good.
I'm good. Yes,
yeah, no worries. Well, thank you both. As always, we'd love to hear from you, and I've finally gotten around to changing the email address from Toroz to Oceanic Gamer. So our email address is contact@oceanicgamer.com, and the same goes for the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/TheOceanicGamer. Same for Twitter, twitter.com/TheOceanicGamer. Email, yeah, that's it. The forums are there, but basically not used, and we really use them as a bit of a planning thing for this podcast. If you ever want to get an idea of what we're going to record each Sunday, we actually put that up on the forums, and we'd love the forums to be more active, but the reality is most people have their own guild forums, and forums are a bit 2001 anyway, but we'd love you on there if you were keen. And that's pretty much it. We'll be back for episode 45 in 2 weeks' time. I promise you it won't be another 3 weeks. And as always, we appreciate listening. And sorry, one last thing. If you do download this via iTunes, we'd so love you to jump on and give the podcast a rating. We haven't sort of had any ratings for a few months now, and it does help us get the word out there. It doesn't matter if they're 1 stars or 5 stars, although it's obviously which ones we'd like. If you can jump onto iTunes and rate, that'd be great. And that means you, Luke, if you haven't done it already.
I'll make sure I do that.
Thank you both, as always. Thank you, Ed. I said we'll have Ed back in a couple of months. And until episode 45, bye.
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 From the coldest depths of interstellar space to the nastiest packed urban sprawls of Coruscant, this was Flashpoint.